This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hello, and welcome to this ILTA Radio podcast. My name is Jack Racinto of Vetter Price, and I am a member of the Technology Solutions Content Coordinating Team for ILTA. Today's podcast is the second in our series called Why Are We Still Talking About Two-Factor? Do It. Discussing this with me today is Mark Miller from Okta. Mark has been with Okta for a year and is currently a sales engineer out of the greater Chicagoland area. He has been in the risk-based adaptive authentication space for 6 years and in identity and access management for the last 20 years. Mark, welcome and thank you so much for joining us today to talk about multi-factor authentication.
Thank you for having me, Jack. It's a pleasure.
When does Okta recommend that an organization implement multi-factor authentication?
With today's environment, and especially with a lot of companies moving things to the cloud where they no longer have control over it from a perimeter standpoint, I would say if you haven't already adopted some sort of approach around multi-factor, or at least what we would call strong authentication, you need to consider to do that right now. It's super important. The number of attackers out there just keep growing. The exploits keep growing and so forth. And you can literally be somebody sitting in your bedroom with the right tools and become a pretty accomplished hacker without a lot of experience. So, you know, we would recommend that you put some sort of strong authentication in place as soon as possible with an approach that makes sense.
That makes sense. And when you talk about an approach that makes sense, are there any kind of guidelines that you have towards, you know, like, I guess you could say practical authentication steps that you would put into place?
Yeah, absolutely. So it really begins with starting to take a risk-based pre-authentication approach. You know, the last thing a user wants to have when they have to deal with change, and MFA is going to be some form of change, is a binary MFA, or we generally call it MFA to death experience, right? I get MFA'd every single time. But rather take on an approach that is doing strong authentication based on the security posture of what the person is actually trying to access. That can take the form of many different things that we can look at around the whole authentication process. So such as things as like, well, you know, where is the user coming from? Are they coming from a trusted network, either because they're connected directly or a VPN? Are they coming from an untrusted network? Are they local Starbucks? Or are they trying to come through an anonymous proxy? Then we can also look at behavioral patterns. Have they suddenly started authenticating from a different city than they have in the past, or a different state, or maybe even a different country that you know that you generally don't do business with? You also have aspects of geofence boundaries, where if I authenticate from a particular location, let's say my home office, and then I go to a local Starbucks about a mile away, that's not as risky as if all of a sudden I'm traveling for work and I'm going to Indianapolis and I'm going to authenticate there. So you may want to go ahead and incorporate some sort of multi-factor based on the breaking of that geofence. You can also deal with things like improbable travel events. So if I authenticate from Chicago right now and in London 10 minutes later, unless I VPN'd into a data center in London, that's not physically possible. You probably want to deny that. On top of that, you can look at different user-based analytic patterns, such as if you have a user that normally logs in from the office 9 to 5 every day, all of a sudden they're logging in from home at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. That may not be a situation you might deny them, but you might want to multi-factor that because there has been an anomaly in their normal pattern. Then there's looking at the actual location from a threat detection standpoint. Are they coming from places that have exhibited known brute force attacks or password spray attacks or known cybercrime or hacktivism? And then on top of that, here at Okta, we believe that we can combine all of a lot of what I've already spoken about into an overall risk score. And so we can have you kind of, you know, use an agglomeration of all of those criteria to decide based on what is it low risk, is it kind of medium unknown risk, or is it definitively high risk? And go ahead and again drive whether we're going to potentially allow the user for low risk, maybe MFA the user for medium risk, and maybe we deny them for high level risk. But then you also take a look at the user's relationship to the organization, because that's also a factor of overall risk. So if I have a C-level executive they have access to information that most normal employees don't. So they are a higher risk. If I have a human resource administrator that has administrative access into maybe Workday, that's riskier. Or a domain admin that has domain admin access to Active Directory, or even just a regular user. All of those personas that I talked about, there's different risk associated with those users based on their relationship. But then again, part of that is what are they actually trying to access, right? So if I go to the HR administrator, if they're trying to get at their email, that's probably not a big deal. But if they're going to try to access Workday where they have administrative privileges, then we might want to go ahead and put more scrutiny either around the authentication process in general, or Okta has the ability to do multi-factor authentication at the application level. So for that particular person, I might want to do multi-factor in that particular situation. A good example that I give to customers when I'm talking to them over the phone is I'm in sales. I travel a lot. And in between meetings, I'll typically find a Starbucks to kind of get some work done, prepare for the next meeting. So if we play out a scenario, I'm at Starbucks. It's very busy. They call my name for my coffee. I'm a bad security guy. I don't lock my computer. Somebody tries to go in to my Okta dashboard, get access to Salesforce. I have multi-factor authentication set up when you access that particular application. So as long as my phone is locked or with me, there's no way they're going to be able to get at my customer list, even though I was ill-prepared and in a hurry and left my screen unlocked. So those are kind of good examples of that particular situation. We can also look at the device itself. Is it a trusted or managed device, or is it an unmanaged bring-your-own device? And on top of that, when you authenticate into Okta, we establish a device fingerprint. So is it a device we've never seen before? Because that might be considered a higher risk. And so those different factors can be taken into account to really go ahead and drive how we do the authentication process and when we decide to multi-factor the user to get in. One of the new things that's cool with technology today is that you now, with a lot of applications, especially cloud-based and federated applications, have the ability to do a passwordless authentication. That is where basically you enter a username, you do some sort of multi-factor, and you don't have to enter a password at all. That helps with password fatigue. It helps the user with the overall authentication experience, so they don't mind the fact that they're getting multi-factored because they realize that it alleviates their ability to have to remember a password that they probably have to change every 30, 60, 90 days or whatever the policy is. And so it really helps around that particular part of adoption because it allows the user, again, a great user experience. But we're really making sure at the end of the day, with that great user experience, we have the appropriate security posture based on what they're actually trying to access at that time.
And I suppose that makes the most sense to have that sweet spot available so that you can figure out exactly what is the best user experience with the most security on top of that so that the multi-factor actually is used by the user and at the same time doesn't impact the way that they work.
Absolutely. We're actually substituting the password for a multi-factor. So there's not one more step in the process. And again, they don't have to remember the password, so it makes that easier. You're always trying to come up with that balance, right? Because people generally don't like change. They understand the reason for security, but if you can basically set it up where they're only getting inconvenienced with an extra step that they normally don't do during authentication, once in a while based on security posture, they don't seem to mind it as much because it's not like, well, every time I want to access this, I have to go ahead and acknowledge a prompt on my phone, or I have to go ahead and use my security key like a YubiKey or something like that.
Well, outside of user acceptance, what other issues have potential clients identified that implementing a multi-factor authentication would cause, and how have you overcome those concerns?
Sure. So one of the ones that generally come up, if you can envision a corporation in general or a manufacturing vertical, a lot of times in the call centers, they don't allow those individuals to have personal devices for security reasons. And on the manufacturing floor, generally you'll run into union issues where the union employees will say, well, I don't have to use my personal device because union rules dictate that. And obviously you still want that strong security posture. There's a few ways that can be handled. There are, you know, lots of convenient technologies today, like I mentioned, YubiKey around security keys. And then with the introduction of the web auth and specification, which is a specification around incorporating kind of bring your own multi-factor to the equation, it really opens the door for adoption of a lot more of the biometric type devices that are out there, like Windows Hello with the Hello cameras, fingerprint readers, things such as that. And the technology itself has become far more reliable too. In other words, it's much harder to actually fool the technology that you are the individual that is authorized to have to that sort of access. So there's different ways you can approach those types of conditions where maybe a mobile device as a soft token, as in a push request, approve or deny, or an SMS text might be a viable option under normal conditions. Additionally, of course, we could send a one-time passcode to a desk phone, so they could request a call and then get that one-time passcode to that specific number. And that, again, alleviates the need for them to have a personal device. So those are generally, you know, the big concerns we see is where you have a situation where there's policies or rules that are in place to prohibit the ability of actually taking advantage of like a smartphone or to go ahead and provide that multi-factor authentication challenge.
And that's great. You actually segued into my next question. As people use remote access, MFA was a big factor in that. Now they're using multi-factor authentication in the office. What concerns with an in-office multi-factor authentication scenario have you seen or heard? I mean, a lot of people say that it's like a burden to enter the two sign-on options, but in this particular case, you alluded earlier on that multi-factor authentication can alleviate using the password to kind of help with that business acceptance. But what other kind of situations arise and potential problematic scenarios come into play on that?
I think in general, having that extra factor can actually, you know, not only increase security posture, but alleviate some of the user fatigue. If I go back to things like Windows Hello and so forth, that can actually be used in place of the password to authenticate into the actual workstation. Then from there, once you're connected to a workstation, you know, with Okta, we have the ability to do what's called integrated Windows authentication, where we use the credentials from the workstation to automatically authenticate you into Okta. So you don't necessarily have to be even challenged for credentials, let alone multi-factor, once you've gotten into that workstation. So the technology has really come a long ways to help facilitate the ability to do secure authentication in using different areas that are really reliable from a security standpoint and help the user experience. If you think of the true NIST definition of multi-factor authentication, it is two or more factors across three pillars, one being something you know, so that's a password, security question, PIN, something like that, something you have, that could be a hard token, a security key, your mobile phone with an authenticator app, things such as that, and something you are, and that's the biometrics, right? That's your fingerprint, your face, things like that. And so as long as you have an authentication flow that incorporates at least two of those across pillars, you are really doing multi-factor. And what I mean by that is, if you ask me for a password and a security question, that is a multiple step authentication, not multi-factor, because it's two things that I know, right? Well, a bad actor can get stolen credentials and they can social engineer the answers to the security questions. So it's not truly multi-factor.
Right.
You really want to, you know, two things across those three pillars, but that's very achievable to with today's technology in a way that really doesn't overburden the user, whether it be some of those biometrics or it be something like a security key or something like that, so they don't actually have an extra step, as it were, when they're authenticating into that workstation. But yeah, we're making sure that we're keeping somebody who is not authorized, either because of borrowed credentials or stolen credentials on the dark web, from being able to access that particular machine.
Well, that was a great snapshot in where we are currently with the technology, but where do you see multi-factored authentication going from here?
There's a lot of companies that are exploring the concept of blockchaining, and that basically unifies the identity in a secure manner across a distributed ledger, much like Bitcoin and things like that. that's still got a ways to go. I mean, we're probably looking 5 years out or so from that standpoint. What you're really going to see in the short term is a lot more of those initial considerations I talked about around, you know, who you are, what you're trying to access, where you're coming from, and a lot more intelligent machine learning around that, establishing patterns around user behavior and really being able to make super intelligent decisions to go ahead and, you know, decide how we make sure we keep the bad actors from being able to actually authenticate as a legitimate user. You know, if you look at the Verizon data breach report, one of the big things that they point out is year after year, breaches have happened because of stolen credentials. We're at about 92% at this point. When I started 6 years ago, we were at like 85%. And every year that goes up. So we really have to protect the identity. It's no longer your perimeter is your data center and you VPN in, you get access to everything.
Right.
The user is now the perimeter. Their identity is the perimeter. So it really comes down to how do we secure that identity? So the concept of blockchaining is one thing that's being developed by many companies, or at least explored as a possibility. The other one is, I think you're going to continue to see more enhancements around biometrics. We may get to a point where you might be able to just, you know, say a passphrase or even just talk in general to your device. And we might have voice recognition good enough that if you were to play back a recording, that wouldn't work.
Wow.
So I think we're seeing as technology continues to advance, and I mean, it leapfrogs all the time, right? Yeah, especially in the mobile phone space, that's driving a lot of that aspect of it. And then on the blockchain side, you've got the military driving a lot of the, you know, encryption enhancements and things like that. I think you're just really going to see a lot of really neat things come out, some innovative things come out, some things maybe I even can't predict at this point come out that are going to help really ensure that we're keeping the bad actors out, but we're really going ahead and making sure we have the appropriate security posture for the authorized user based on what they're actually trying to access.
Well, that's a terrific look into the future, and it makes a lot of sense. Mark, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today on MFA.
You're very welcome, Jack. It has been my pleasure.
And thank you to our listeners who've joined us for this episode of ILTA Radio's Why Are We Still Talking About Two-Factor? Do it.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.